The method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello, and welcome to Unsound Methods with me, Jamie Batchin.
And me, Lachlan Bloom.
If this is your first time listening, this is a podcast where we speak to other writers of literary fiction about their craft, approach, and technique.
And this week we're speaking to Lucy Elvin. Chatted to her about her debut novel, The Weak Spot, which is out now at Prototype Press. We talked about the process in writing and editing that novel, how she sort of drew on her early experiences and family in France and a sense of place in the novel.
Yeah, I think she's got a very interesting approach, which you'll hear about, but it involves her jotting down things she sort of mishears or just things that form a little connection in her mind and sort of brings that all together and slowly builds up over time.
Yeah, it was quite fascinating to hear her process of moving from the canonical document of notes into the sort of final phase of a finished prose and the novel.
Yeah, Lucy's also had a very long-standing relationship with an editor who kind of took on her work, and it's really interesting to hear about that, how that's developed as well. I think that's the first time that we've spoken to someone who worked with an editor on short stories and built it up, and then at some point her editor said, I think this might be something else, this might not be a short story, and from that The Weak Spot grew.
Without any further ado, we'll give you Lucy Elvin.
I guess to kick off, I might ask you about what a sort of typical writing day looks like for you.
When I was thinking about this, I racked my brains for what a typical writing day would look like for me, but I don't think I've ever had a day where I've spent the whole day writing. Certainly when I was writing the book that is coming out, I just was working so much that I would write kind of at moments when I could, sort of on the tube or when I was on holiday or in the evenings, but I never really had a kind of routine. And when I try and think about when I wrote it, I have no idea. I just don't remember. I have no method in that regard.
With the content that you wrote in those sections, was it part of, did you have a bigger picture and you were just constrained by time, but you knew what you were going to write next in the next sort of segment of time, or were you sort of fitting what you wrote into the time that you had? So if you had half an hour, you'd write a section that was sort of complete in itself for that half hour, and then when you came back to it in the next segment, you were doing something again.
I think probably because, I mean, the book is made up of very short sections, and they would be in my mind probably, well, actually when I wrote it, it was sort of long, kind of, it was maybe in three parts. It was just this kind of lyrical, quite long chunk of text. But I think the way it's been broken up now is more like how it's kind of closer to the way in which I wrote it, in that I would probably have like an idea which will have ended up being a chapter, and that I would work on for a while. And then it was more about like how particular sections felt to me. The way I assembled it was sort of quite I don't feel like I had an intentional overarching picture, but I feel like I sort of organically worked towards the end from the beginning without having a board on which I pinned like plot points or having a kind of sense of where it would go.
So at the chapter level, then you had a sort of view of it more than overall the whole book.
Yeah, I think so, because I've written short stories before and I'd never written anything longer. Once I broke it up into chapters, it was much more obvious to me what should be a first line and what should be a last line and how to order the sentences within it. But until that point, I was just completely sort of winging it and hoping that it would feel coherent at the end. But I had, you know, the idea of the place, and because it's set in this kind of small town that resembles a part of places in a part of France that my family's from. And I have a very strong feeling associated with that. And as soon as I had that place, I had all these other things I wanted to explore within that. And everything that I wrote sort of seemed to fit into that, yeah, like I say, kind of unplanned way. But now I look back on it and I don't really feel like it's, I don't know, I think it's interesting because it doesn't really feel like it seemed to feel at the time. Like I don't have the same, it doesn't have the same atmosphere that it did for me when I wrote it. It feels like it's got all these things that happened in London and that were in my life at the time that I wasn't really aware were seeping into the writing.
Does it still have the resonances that you felt to begin with to some extent? Or is it quite a transformation when you read it back now?
Yeah, I think transformation is a really good word for it. Yeah, I think it does, obviously, yeah, it does have some of the resonances. And it feels to me like, I guess this is kind of a cliche, but, you know, I think when people write a first book, probably they're trying to understand certain things about themselves before they are able to transition to something like that feels more alien. And yeah, it has that early feeling of family stuff, and specifically that part of my family.
With the atmosphere being quite important, the sense of place that you were initially sort of drawing up from that part of France, were your notes to start off with quite impressionistic and just trying to bring that to life? Or?
No, I have a really, my process, what I laughingly call my process, is quite, it's basically just, yeah, it's all impressionistic. So, but I didn't add the landscape in until later on. But it's essentially like I'll write down sentences that I've heard like on the bus or like bits of writing. If I'm reading a book and I misread a line and find the way I misread it kind of telling, I'll write that down. Or else, like, you know, just like big long list of things that I find funny, especially if they've like, if I've written an email and when I look back on it, it reveals something that I didn't like, that was in my unconscious that I didn't mean to let on. I find that funny and I wrote that down. And then I just try and string those sentences together in a way that, which is how I was kind of, because I wrote short stories, but the only person I worked with on short stories for a really long time was the American short story writer, Diane Williams, who has a magazine in America. And the first short story I wrote, I sent to her. So we've been back and forth for 7 years, and she's incredible. But she's quite specific in, I don't know, for whatever reason, the combination of me and her has ended up with this very kind of quite torturous method of writing, where there's, I just make so many notes, and it's so impressionistic. And what I find most interesting is the stuff that like happens by accident. So you have to do a lot of stuff deliberately in order for things to happen by accident, and then I try and string them together. So it's all impressionistic. That in fact, the landscape stuff is the most kind of concrete stuff, because it's a landscape I know really well. But it's quite funny, because when you write about things that are kind of in nature or like quite obvious things, like a cliff, you end up saying quite a lot about how you feel about that cliff without meaning to. So I think that comes out quite a lot, because I mean, obviously it's somewhere where I have a lot of memories. A lot of strong feelings.
That's very interesting. So that's, you have to really build up a very, very large amount of material to then kind of work through. And do you do that in sort of stages? Would you, you're not going to say, write, I don't know, it's a note form, obviously, but 500,000 words that you're then going to cut down to a sort of 150-page novel, I don't know what, 40,000 words, let's say. Do you do that in sections as you go along?
Yeah, I do that as I go along, but I don't think I wrote 500,000 words. But, you know, it will often happen that I'll send a story that's 12 pages long to Diane, and it will come back 140 words long. Like it doesn't.
Wow. Yeah.
Which I don't really mind.
That's quite a compression from 12 pages to.
Yeah. Yeah. 40 words. And obviously this was actually like, the novel was not like that, because I wasn't working with her. I was working with a brilliant editor in America called Yuka Higurashi, but so I had much more space, and I felt like I had a lot of space, but it's still a very short novel, and I think it's quite compressed because I've just got used to cutting a lot.
And on a practical note, when you're taking these notes, do you put them all in one place? Have you got a notebook that you carry around with you, or a particular place on your computer or phone that you do, or is it depend where you are and what format you're reading the sort of impetus for the note, that it depends where you store it?
Well, I'm not very organized, but I do try and have a, like a document with all my notes in it, and then a document with the book in it.
So it's like a Word document that if something occurs to you, you think, oh, that's interesting in some way. You'd go open the Word document and add like a new line and write a sentence or something to remind you of that point.
Yeah, and then it's a constant process of sifting that note document into all these different other note documents that will be like notes that might work for a novel, notes that definitely don't work for a novel.
And do you categorize them at all? Is there this is a note for an idea for something a character might say. This is a note for a description of a cliff. This is a is there any sort of categorization, or is it literally just line after line of ideas in any?
Yeah, it's line after line, because I quite like the way that they kind of accidentally interact with each other. So I don't like the way of predetermining too much what they should be. I also find, like, if I'm writing a diary, sometimes I'll finish writing about something and then I'll put a line when I'm writing by hand, and then I'll write about something else, and then I'll look back and be like, well, those two things were obviously related. The two things on either side of the line, I was just putting in that line because I wasn't willing to admit to myself those two things were related. So I similar kind of logic. I think it's quite funny to see how, I mean, I try and keep my notes in chronological order, and I think it's quite funny to see how they interact, even when you don't realize at the time that they are.
At what point do you sort of move beyond taking notes to writing something a bit more expansive? Is that as soon as you've got...
That's the question I'm asking myself at the moment. It's like, when am I going to start? I don't know. I think when I do start writing, it's quite quick.
So it's have you already got sort of 20 pages of Word document with however many lines in it?
Yeah, I've got so many notes at the moment, and they're all about the same thing, and I can't work out how they all fit together. And I just need a first line or something, but I can't find it.
I presume at some point the urge just takes you to start, and then, or you find some link and you begin. And at that point, are you sort of starting from page one, chapter one, and working forward?
Yeah.
Or is sort of, oh, those, that note on page 10 and that note on page 18, there's a link there, I'm going to turn that into a couple of paragraphs?
Probably the beginning has to be the beginning, because I think that you have to be able to, well, now I say you have to, I don't, there are no rules, and probably as soon as I say this it will change, but I think I have to feel like I'm unwrapping something that's happened in the first sentence throughout the rest of the book or the story. I also I find it very hard to orient myself in a story unless it's the right first sentence. Recently, yeah, I've tried to write a few things and thought this is great, and then come back to it and thought, no, that doesn't quite work. It's too confused, and I think it's to do with the beginning. The first sentence is really important. One thing I've found is I often try and write stories that start with a first sentence that someone else saying something to the narrator, and often that's a way of me avoiding the narrators. Often that comes back from an editor, and it's like, cut this other person getting in the way. So I think there's a lot of throat clearing by inserting other people.
But yeah, That's an interesting setup to do, isn't it? Even if you know that ultimately that might be disposable, to just have that as the jumping point that then feeds the rest of it.
Yeah, it's like there has to, I guess if you then cut that line, then it's something has happened and someone is responding to it, which is not a bad place to start. Yeah.
And when you're making that start, is it, you mentioned earlier writing in longhand, is that your general process to take the notes on the computer in the Word document and then have them up and start writing longhand on paper? Or are you,
it's more usually that I'll write longhand like in a notebook for a long time, and then I'll pick out the lines I think are interesting, and then I'll put them in the computer. But I do think that I don't think I wrote any of my book on my computer, like the actual sentences I wrote by hand, and then I kind of rearranged them on a computer, because you can do that so much more easily than obviously cutting with scissors and sticking back together.
So it's sort of an extra layer of editing. You're not writing the book per se when you're writing it longhand, you're just writing out sections that then you could sort of pick through to create the finished book.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd like to find another way of doing it, because I think it's quite a time-consuming way. And also, by the end, when I was writing my book, I did actually feel like I was sort of writing without making notes. I was just going, you know, how you would expect to write. Like, I want to get from A to B, and that's what I will do, rather than being like, how am I going to rearrange all these things so that something happens or surprises me? Because I kind of knew how... I didn't actually know how it was going to end, but I kind of knew that it had to go somewhere. It couldn't just carry on forever.
This is when you were sort of 70% of the way through writing it. It sort of picked up momentum and carried itself.
Yeah, and I didn't have to do all that kind of complicated stuff.
And do you find the note-taking and the sort of impetus to take notes, does that sort of dry up as you're moving into the editing phase? Or are you still adding new notes into the original Word document as you're writing?
I think it carries on. Yeah, I think I'm always taking notes. Definitely there's a moment when you're writing where everything seems so interesting. Everything that you run into is like material that you could use. And the world is sort of quite magical at that time. And then...
And at that point, you're still chronologically adding it on as another point on the end of the original Word document, rather than, oh, that's a great idea, I'm just going to start writing, you know, what I've got an idea for this character, I'm just going to write it out. You put the note down first and then work the same process to get to the finished text.
I think at that point, when you're sort of so inside it, it's quite natural. It seems to fall in, you kind of know where it's going to fit. It's not so accidental. It's not so impressionistic. But it's... The problem with writing in a way that doesn't feel very kind of intentional is that I always feel really ashamed of what I end up with, because I think, wow, this is representing something I did not mean to put out into the world, or like this is not something I considered. It's not like a very willful act of self-branding, for instance, or it's just like, these are all these kind of mistakes that I've made or accidents, and I don't know. Anyway, I always feel very ashamed, but I think that's not a bad thing. I think that that's probably a sign that there's something in there that's quite vulnerable.
I mean, I think that gap between what's planned in the first place and what you end up with, is that's always going to be a chasm, whether you write really, really detailed character sort of CVs and plan everything to the nth degree. I would expect, I'm sure one day we'll speak to a writer who says, no, this is exactly what I set out to do, and it came off perfectly. But I don't really believe that writer exists. So it's those happy accidents. It's almost like you're embracing and choosing to just make that a fully integrated part of the process, the happy accidents, maybe it's a more honest way of doing it.
I don't feel like that kind of confidence of, if I were to start writing a book and I knew exactly what it was going to be about, I would reach the end. Whereas in this, you know, I know I can engineer these situations in which these accidents happen and work with them. So that seems like the most possible thing, the only possible way of doing it.
I was wondering if we spoke to people who wrote, and that's such a loaded term, but like people who wrote genre fiction more, whether... just because of the sort of formulae and stuff they might need to fall back on, they might not feel the same way. Because I think, there's so many writers we speak to say variations on, if I knew exactly what I was going to end up with, or I know everything that's going to happen in it, where's my enjoyment in writing it together?
I think it's funny. I guess with nonfiction, people write proposals and they know chapter 4 will be about this. And so you expect, to some extent, and also the way that people talk about fiction is often as though fiction writers do the same thing. But I guess, like, on the level of language, what's interesting is always what's surprising. And then on the level of plot, I don't know.
With you worked with an American editor with this book.
Yep.
And has it's been published in the US already? So with were there things that you had to take into account? I mean, I know it's sort of set in France. I mean, is it explicitly set in France? It's sort of set in an Alpine town, but I don't think it doesn't really give you a stay about that. Were there sort of cultural things that you had to change? This is a very boring sort of technical question on that front, I guess. For the American market, or were they just happy to go along with the world you'd created?
They were so nice. They let me do what I wanted to do. They're just like small things, like motorway had to change to highway, that kind of thing. But like, no, I think I even got European medicine names into my pharmacy, but no, they didn't change anything. And now it's being published in the UK. And again, I was very lucky, and my publisher here, Jess, who's really wonderful, hasn't wanted me to change anything.
Have Prototype let you go back to having motorway instead of highway?
Yeah. It's very important.
I'm sure. Really getting to the most important elements of fiction on this podcast.
At the same time, it's, you know, when you've, I don't really, you know, I've never written a book before, so I don't really mind someone saying, it's actually quite comforting for someone to kind of come in with a rule of house style and say, we want it to all be like this, because at least it seems like there's structure around me.
And with the one you're working on at the moment that you're amassing notes for, and you said you're trying to find what's the thing that sort of instigates it all, is that going back to the thing about the instigating first sentence that you have, is that the point at which you're going to wait until you really start changing from writing notes to kind of writing in earnest? Or would you start and think, oh, I can always come back? And because you said about how important the first sentence was to you.
I think so, yeah. I think when I find the right sentence, it will happen. I also need the time. I haven't had a huge amount of time recently because my book is coming out in a week. So, as soon as I have a kind of a stretch in front of me where I feel like I can really work on something and like in a sustained way. I also just, it's that thing of going, sometimes it's easy to go over your notes and sometimes it's really painful, or like it feels like it's so intense that you can't really go back over them, which I think is obviously a sign that you should probably go over them, but you just need to be able to steel yourself a bit.
Do you end up with multiple versions of an opening sentence, or when it's more a case of mulling over your notes until you sort of feel happy and then the sentence sort of springs into your mind and you start writing?
I try not to edit sentences too much.
You're not sort of sitting slogging away doing version 76 of the first sentence and going, oh, that's still not right.
No, unless there's like a repetition, because I do think that the way that they, like, if you're finding sentences in your life, I feel like they have this kind of specific energy to them, and then you can really mess with that if you're like, you know, chiseling them. Well, chiseling is okay, but I think if you're adding things, I also think like actually attaching two different sentences together is okay, but not like adding adverbs and things like that. But I also think I probably am going to change all my views on this if I start writing something new. It's just the way I wrote this one.
Is it Diane Williams, the author that you've worked with over the last 7 years? Is that how did that sort of come about, and how has that process, has it been the same since you first contacted her? And
yeah, it's been like really, really important to me. I think how it came about was just that I worked as an editor for a few years, and I heard in one of the magazines I was working for about Noon. I was working in America and I was quite intrigued, and I wrote a story and I sent it to her by post because it was the only way to send things to her. And then a few weeks later, she sent me a very, very kind email. And I mean, this was 7 years ago, 8 years ago now. And I just remember every word of her message. And I remember that whole evening, like, so vividly. She did her thing where she cut it down a lot.
Did you send that as a submission to the magazine that she was editing?
Yeah.
And she then sent you back a response with edits.
Yeah. She said, you know, that she liked it, and that she could send an edit to me if I wanted. And it was just kind of, since then I'll send her at least a story every year, because it comes out every year. And over time, I mean, sometimes she leaves them as they were, but more often she'll cut them down quite a lot and she'll come up with a different title. And it's really interesting, I think, working with her. Is she's one of those editors who's got her such a strong sense of what she's doing, such strong instincts, and I think that's quite rare. I mean, it's rare for it to be to that extent. She's almost kind of, well, you're collaborating, basically. Mm. You're not really being edited. Often she'll send a story back to me and it will be about something I didn't think it was about. She'll have found something in it that was like not what I realized I was writing about. Or else it will be, it's just kind of lots, it's like an exercise. And it's very like, I don't mean this in a negative way. I mean it in a very positive way. It's very hierarchical in that I have a lot of respect for her, and she really knows what she's doing. And so, you know, she has a lot of authority. It's not like I'm pushing back a lot. It's quite an interesting relationship to have with someone.
Was it quite different then? Did you work with her at all on the novel, or was that a whole separate project?
She read the first section because I thought that it was a short story, and she responded to it very differently to how she's responded to my work in the past, and said, you know, I don't want to make too many edits. Where do you think this is going? Where did it come from? I'm very excited about it. And that made me think I can probably keep going with this. And eventually, yeah, it was a book, and so it was no longer a short story. So she did help me, and she actually found the first sentence for me, which really helped.
I begin at the beginning. I write my name on the first page. I write my name, and then I write the title. Then I write my name. Then I turn over and I write the title of the book. I write chapter one, and then I write on. And when it's, I leave a space so I can make alterations as I go along, but I don't revise it afterwards. And then it goes to the typist, and she types it, and I revise that, and that's the book. That's finished.
Was that the point that it went from being a potential short story to a novel? From the point of that feedback, yeah. You decided, okay, this must be a sign that it's a long piece. Right, that's fascinating.
I don't know why, you know, it'd be nice to know why that was different from other things. But.
So you haven't sort of thought, you haven't been able to sort of qualitatively tell what was in there that was pointing it in a very different direction?
I mean, I think probably it's dealing with longer term concerns of mine than things when I'm writing a short story. But and maybe also because I was, when I started writing my novel, I wasn't in work. I just finished a job. So I had a lot more bandwidth. It wasn't just working on something for several evenings in one week and then sending it off. It was, or you know, over a period of time, it was like really thinking about it. I had a couple of months where I was mainly writing, and then I found another job. So yeah, I think I just had more like sustained energy on it. I hope it's that and not completely impossible to replicate.
Was it quite a surprise when Diane came back sort of saying, you know, what is this, some part of something bigger? Did you, until that point, were you quite clear in your head, this is a short story that I'm sending in the usual way that I have done for the last X number of years? Or did you have a feeling, oh, this is a bit different, and her response sort of confirmed that?
Yeah, I did think it was a bit different because I was trying to write something longer. It's just that in the past when I've tried to write something longer, I've not managed. So this was good. It was good timing because that was all I had to do, really. Yeah, so it wasn't a complete surprise, but it felt like the right time. It felt like it could easily have been. I wouldn't have been surprised either if she'd said, this is actually a 200 word long story.
So with the one that you're pulling the notes together for now, is that kind of tonally a similar piece, or are you trying something utterly different than being the notes?
I'm trying something utterly different. Uh-huh. I feel really, I don't know if it's the pandemic or why, but I really want to write something quite splashy and not necessarily a tell-all memoir, but like more like, I quite want to write something that feels quite scandalous. And when I was writing the Weak Spot, I think I was a bit scared of giving too much away. I was working in quite a minimalist way. And I quite want to try throw loads of quite different and maybe even conflicting stories at something, or combine them within a piece, not worry about controlling the narrative as much. I think it was quite controlled, the Weak Spot. And I quite want to sort of actually like force myself to just let go of that and write about things that are kind of messier and more embarrassing than like a professional environment, which is, I mean, not to say that I don't think that there are things that feel very vulnerable in The Weak Spot, but it's just kind of, it does feel like quite a kind of minimalist story where the narrator doesn't give very much away about herself. And I kind of want to have a narrator that overshares.
Yeah, I think it's interesting talking about it. If you earlier were sort of saying you felt embarrassment or ashamed in some way and like revealing too much. But reading it certainly feels more cryptic to me, and more like you see the narrator doesn't give too much away. It certainly doesn't feel like it's drawing on anything. That it feels real in a way, but more real as in a dream than real as in you're describing a memoir of events that happened. It's interesting to hear that was sort of a conscious choice, I guess, to go for that sort of minimal, sort of reserved style rather than was that something that crept in? You sort of started writing and thought, oh, I've overshared here, let me revise that to make it a little less clear, a little bit more ambiguous or minimal, or did the style and the content kind of go hand in hand, that you've kind of had to write in that minimal style just because of the nature of what you're writing about?
Exactly, yeah. I think that because of the content, because of the material that I had, it ended up being in that style. And also because I really thought about it as a story about a person who's very scared of imposing a narrative, like who isn't able to do that. Like she's very good at listening to other people's stories. And as soon as she has a clear sense of power in her own life, usually it's undermined and it kind of crumbles quite quickly. And so that fear of imposing control over a reader or another person when you're telling them a story was like always in the back of my mind. And also because one of the characters is someone who is very comfortable controlling other people through narrative, I think that if you've been around someone like that, it's very likely that you would then feel like it's something that you don't want to do, and actually have your own sense of agency or ability to narrate undermined just by the experience of having been around someone like that. So yeah, I did think that the material meant that it had to be the narrator had to be someone who's very cautious about sharing things, but also it just isn't admitting to herself certain things about how she feels. Like she's trying to deal with the grief of her mother having died and doesn't really talk about it, but just goes around trying to save other people. So someone who's very kind of distant from remote from their own feelings.
From reading it, that all that comes across, and it's interesting how that builds in the process from starting with notes to get to the finished novel.
And I think that has to reflect something about how I felt about it too, because I think that I never admitted to myself really that I wanted to be a writer. So when I sort of started to write a book and, you know, had it confirmed to me that it could be a book when I sent it to Diane, and she said, well, maybe it's something longer. And then I think I was sort of like, I wasn't sort of thinking, right, I'm the perfect person to do this. I was sort of like constantly kind of feeling very ashamed that I wanted to monopolize someone else's attention by making them read my book. So I'm sure it reflects some of that as well.
Yeah. I think, but at the same time, the sort of reticence of the narrator, it doesn't necessarily reflect on the author. The fact that things are not revealed is not clear whether the reason for not revealing things. It kind of implies the author is almost more, well, and not necessarily implies the author is more controlling, but the fact that there's not a straightforward plot as a sort of genre fiction book might follow, your brain starts immediately thinking, oh, why is this not being revealed? Why is this sort of apparent jump in what's happening occurred? What is the author doing here? Which it's that sort of distant from the idea of the author being too timid.
It shows authority to decide that you're not going to say something, I guess. But I also, because it's about denial, right? It's a book about someone who isn't really willing to, or isn't seeing what's going on around her very clearly. So I think that suits, I mean, that's what I was trying to, it's not even as I was making a kind of conscious decision. It's more like, because I was trying to think about what it takes, what kind of mental processes someone goes through in order to not be fully aware of what's going on around them, I ended up with this kind of style of someone who's, yeah, being really methodical, like just telling you about her work day and not really taking anything in.
On the next novel so far, you've not sort of put pen to paper in terms of the style.
Well, I've tried several different things. and tried to kind of shock myself. I'm a bit, I just don't know if it will work, basically. I kind of can see how you build something from quite a minimalist perspective, but I don't know what happens when you start to use kind of contradiction, whether it becomes too confusing or if it's possible to kind of have a through line in a book like that. So I don't know. I just have to see by trying, basically. I don't have a theory that I'm going to enact.
Have you still been writing short stories in the period since you finished?
Yeah, I wrote a few short stories for the next Noon, Diane's magazine, which are all kind of in different ways about sex, which is quite interesting because it's something that I didn't write about in my book. And I thought that I kept seeing in books that were coming out at the same time, young women saying, I'm not interested in, or people in general actually saying that they were only interested in books that had sex in them. And I sort of reacted very strongly against that and was sort of annoyed by it. And I thought, don't lecture me about sex. I kind of got really irritated by it. And then I thought about it and I thought, it's actually just such a inherently good topic for fiction, because like so many good stories, when you know you're just kind of spending time with your friends, or will be about sex. And so it's interesting that I was so resistant to doing that. So anyway, I wrote a few short stories like that, and I've been writing some articles, like non-fiction articles about various things.
We started asking this earlier, and I'm sure it's one of those things there's not really an answer to, but how do you know when you're compiling the notes for the novel that something belongs to a short story and not to the material you're amassing? I mean, I feel this is similar to what we covered earlier on, but I'm just interested in, when it comes to your mind, like what's the quality of it that makes you think that goes in this bar, not this bar?
And then an add-on question to that, if you're writing non-fiction as well, how do you know that a note is not something that's going to go in non-fiction in a future or current non-fiction piece? And I imagine some of the times that's quite obvious, but do you ever come across an issue categorizing those as well?
I think that almost all sentences could go in either. I don't think that it's obvious. I do think that non-fiction editors are more likely to cut sort of like very impressionistic sentences where you're just like totally projecting on something than a fiction editor. But what was your initial question?
That how you decide, like what's the quality within it? What's the thing that makes you decide that it goes in one pot or the other?
Because, well, in a short story, I think I just kind of, it's just how it feels, which is a really wishy-washy answer. But usually if I have a first line, then I'll bring all the lines that seem to me to be of the same kind of feeling into another document. And then as soon as I have that first line, I sort of know like which lines don't work and then what order the other ones should go in. And that happens really, really quickly. And it's just, yeah, to do with how it seems to, not because I will want them to feel the same, but more like because they feel like they progress in a certain way and they have the same kind of emotional palette, or like the same kind of tongue-in-cheekness, or the same kind of saturation, like something vague that I can't really put my finger on.
Do you have a separate notes document for a short story you're working on it at the moment, and the novel you're working on at the moment, or is it you just have one sort of September 2021 notes and then they all go in there and then you start segmenting them off into different sub
word documents? Yeah, and I kind of think like now I've got to the point where I've got so many notes, I'm just gonna have to go and cull it down, otherwise I'm not gonna be able to work with it. Like, there's just too much to keep in mind at one time. And that's the other thing about novels, is that you have to keep it all kind of, it's so much harder to keep it all in mind. So yeah, you do need more time. I mean, that's really obvious, but I guess it's a big thing.
I'm really amazed that you say that you have one document and that's what you use. Because I don't know, just somehow hearing the question, I was like, I'm sure that there will be just different sheets to have that sort of separation.
Well, because ideally what I would do is I will print out that document on with one-sided printing settings, and then like this is the dream, right? Like have a really big room and cut them out and then like try and arrange them all around me like some sort of like mad Bond villain. That would be what I would do. So like the idea of having them all together is really nice. I'm not very organized, I don't have any spatial awareness, I don't have any kind of like, you know, sense of how I would put them in different places other than what's fun to do when I see them all kind of laid out around me, or like on another document.
Once they go into like another document, once you've sort of collated, I don't know, what, 10 different notes from the main document into another document, do you then move them back out again or reintroduce them? Or once yeah. they're all together, those ones, they go together? And
I think this is where the first line comes in. I feel like if you have that first line that binds everything together, then you're good. And then there's like a very specific feeling. But then often I'll write put some notes together and think this is great, this is perfect. And then it just won't, for whatever reason, it just won't hang together when I look at it again. There just won't be that kind of cohesion. Like, I don't know, I want to use a cooking metaphor here, but an egg, I don't know, there's no thing that is kind of bringing it all together. Yeah, so I often realize I've not managed to do it and take them out again. But that's why it's also important not to edit your sentences, because if you just take them out again, then you can use them again and they've got all the same energy as they had before. Whereas if you have messed with them, then they become confused and it's hard to know why you had them in the first place.
Do you ever go back to things? I mean, is there a sentence that you wrote in 2015 that just keeps popping up in your mind and you never had somewhere to place it, but you think, oh, that was a great thing that I overheard someone saying in the street? And
yeah, I have loads of those. It's just a question of like how organized I am or whether or not I still hold on to them. But, and I also think that like you can't be completely like, I deleted all the notes to do with my first book because I can't just hold on to these forever. And also like, I think, you know, different periods of your life, you will like naturally have different thoughts that work together. But if you hold on to them too long, you won't really know why you thought that they were interesting.
One of the things that comes up when we speak to people for this podcast is, and it's something I do myself, is having a sort of file that's things I like, but that don't fit here or something like that. And I think everyone we've spoken to who's done that, that they always say, yeah, I've never gone back to it. I've never gone and looked at what's in there like 5 years later. Maybe just letting go of it. If it's stuff that is related to a novel, that novel's written, yeah, it's the healthiest thing is just to actively get rid of it.
Yeah, you can go too far, can't you? I also think like all these rules are really kind of, they're not very healthy. Like they're just ways in which I kind of rationalize to myself or like try and, you know, trick myself into focusing on a project. I don't think that they're necessarily like ideal, or nor would I recommend anyone else uses them.
Well, I guess that's what we're discovering, investigating people's methods, is you got to find the one that works for you, or the ones that work for the project and for you.
I really feel like it would be nice to feel like that kind of authorial control, where like, oh, I want to write about X topic and I'm going to go and just do it and not indulge all these circuitous ways of getting to the point and just try and be as clear and as direct as possible. This has never been my strong point, but
yeah, it does seem like it's the dream somehow, but it's unclear how achievable that is to me. You sort of imagine like a master craftsman furniture maker or something who's, yeah, I know exactly how I'm going to make this chair. I've done it before. All the steps are laid out and you can go from A to B, but it never quite feels like that writing somehow. Well, for me anyway, it's a sort of circuitous route of banging your head against lots of walls.
And I don't believe that any good writing is actually done that way. Because like if I actually read a classic book, I never think, oh, it seems like, you know, Chekhov was just writing from A to B. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
No. It doesn't seem like that. It sounds like to me like he was writing from like F to A to Z to... And he had all these notes and, I mean, I have no idea, but it seems like things don't, to do it best would not be just to have that huge sense of power and control and like blast your way through it. Can I return to something you asked, I didn't answer before, which was about ambiguity and whether I put it back in, whether I deliberately inserted ambiguity.
I guess I was saying not specifically ambiguity, but you sort of suggested you had... you'd felt embarrassed to reveal too much. So I was wondering if you'd sort of gone back to either add ambiguity or add a layer to shield what you were originally thinking of.
So I actually did, no, nothing to shield is something that I was originally thinking of, but I did have a moment where I went to see it weirdly like a dance show, and it was really useful because I realized that one of the qualities that was in the dance show that I didn't have in my book was that there was a lot, or I didn't feel like I had enough of in my book, was that there was a lot of, well, what seemed to me to be like ambiguity in terms of like gender, and also in terms of kind of this just kind of fluidity that dancers have. I don't know, it's hard for me to pin down, but it seemed like they were working with this kind of thing, which is actually in like so much art, which is like mystery or ambiguity. And I just didn't have that to the right extent in my book. And that was really helpful, because then I actually went through and added things where there were like, hard for me to describe, but like moments where there was like the narrator seeing something, but not quite knowing what it was. Yeah. And like, there's one bit where she's on the train and she goes past and she sees some of the townspeople like dredging something out of the river, and she doesn't know what it is, and she never finds out, and that's fine. And I feel like that is potentially quite annoying, but at the same time, I think that it's good, because I think that so much of the world is like, where I become more political, is valuing like efficiency and branding and being super clear about things. And I just think that it actually a really important component of stuff that is artistic, that it shouldn't follow the same rules. And so I deliberately wanted to insert that. And I sometimes read book reviews where someone criticizes someone for not being clear, or, and obviously you can do that in a way that's ineffective, but I think it's just interesting how people have like accepted that that is something that art should be, because I think if you look at paintings and if you look at films, there are lots of moments actually, even and in literature, which are beautiful because they are slightly ambiguous. And I think that people are very uncomfortable with that, but that's the value of it.
I feel like I cannot agree with you strongly enough about that. I'm thinking about film and novels particularly, that when you feel like the work is being done for you, or that it's just, you can sometimes watch really, films are just the easy one to talk about in relation to this, like really, really competently put together films that really follow a very satisfying arc. It's all great. And yeah, it's really, really unsatisfying, because it's, yeah, everything is shored up, and there's a real effort to make sure that there's no ambiguity and that you get everything. And it kind of doesn't reflect life anyway. I mean, I think sometimes that the criticism could be that the writer didn't know and unwittingly left gaps that were confusing to the reader. And then maybe there's something to do with style that could overcome that. But yeah, I'm not sure that it's an entirely fair criticism.
I agree. It can be better or worse, but it's not in itself a bad thing. And in fact, I think it's often a good thing.
I think it's something, obviously, in art is important, but I think it goes even deeper or further. It feels, in a way, that's how the human brain works, how people, at a fundamental level, things are ambiguous in a way that often they're not presented as. They often are presented as being clear, or, you know, in this pat answer to certain things. And it doesn't feel that that's the way things ultimately are. So when novels can capture that, they're doing something that not a lot of other forms necessarily can. I mean, like dance, for instance, it can capture a different aspect of it. But I think in a novel, that sort of deep ambiguity is useful. And obviously, when it is a ambiguity over something specific, that, I guess it depends on the context, doesn't it? If it's a novel, James Bond novel or something, and then there's a crucial part that's not clearly explained, it's just annoying and it doesn't add anything. But when it's part of the whole world of the novel, then it can get to something a lot deeper, a lot more meaningful than giving the sort of straight answer.
And also, I feel like people write, they like novelists and writers do use ambiguity, so it's kind of weird for critics to, I mean, it's not all critic. I'm like straw manning here to a really like scandalous extent, but it's quite weird that like metaphor is like, I think, a type of ambiguity, like in theory. And so it's just something that we don't value as a society right now, but we would miss it if it was gone. We just don't really talk about it as though we need it. Mm. But we do.
And it's something I've been thinking recently. It's probably there's a academic field of study in it, but as far as I'm aware, pretty much all languages have words that have multiple meanings. And I mean, it just seems to be an intrinsic part of the way that natural language works compared with, you know, like scientific language, and where there's a definition and it means one and only one thing. In English, there's countless words that it's unclear what it means until you have the context, because it can have 2, 3, 4 different meanings. And as far as I know, I think that applies to most human languages. And that intrinsic ambiguity, I don't know, I mean, it must come from somewhere. Because, I mean, it would be perfectly, I'd imagine, perfectly simple to come up with a language where one word means one and only one thing. But that's just not the way it works.
Hieroglyphic.
Yeah. possibly.
It's the hill I'm going to die on.
Okay, well, thank you to Lucy for joining us, and thank you for listening.
You can find us online at unsignedmethods.co.uk and all the usual podcast places. Do remember to like and subscribe wherever you find this podcast, if indeed you did like the podcast. And you can find us on Twitter at unsignedmethods.
Yeah, we'll put some more information about Lucy and her writing in the show notes, so you'll be able to find some links there and social media and things like that. If you'd care to learn more about me and my writing, you can find my website at jamiebatchin.com. I'm on Twitter at jamiebatchin or Instagram at jamie_batchin.
And you can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com, or I'm on Twitter at lachlanbloom. Yeah, hope you enjoyed the show, and see you again next time.